It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya time. Welcome into a brand new episode, episode number 480 of Rico Bronya. The New York Mets beat the Pittsburgh Pirates on Monday night in walk-off fashion, and the New York Mets survive against the Pittsburgh Pirates on Tuesday night in, wow, I'm getting very nervous. We're about to kill everybody, but we hold on and win game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. We record this Rico Bronya, whether you're consuming it live on YouTube or on the wherever you download your podcast, right after the Mets survive against the Pirates on a Tuesday night, a game in which Kodai Senga continues to perform his magic, his Jedi mind tricks of putting guys on base, getting himself into a lot of trouble, getting himself into trouble that makes you think there's no way he's getting out of this unscathed, and then finding a way to survive. And Kodai Senga did that through the second inning, the third inning, the fourth inning, the fifth inning. And then finally, Carlos Mendoza said, I'm sorry, you've gotten 102 pitches. A ball went through Mark Vientos's glove. I need to take you out. I'm going to trust the bullpen. And Reed Garrett couldn't throw a freaking strike. And the Mets are able to escape that jam, a ninth inning jam. They eke out two runs against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they win these back-to-back games against Pittsburgh. Let's break down these two games. There's certainly a lot to talk about from the opener, the Monday night series winning walk-off against the Pittsburgh Pirates. But let's start with game two. Let's start with the fact that Kodai Senga, even if he isn't going deep enough into games, which can be frustrating, we all understand that, continues to be a magician. And since the moment Kodai Senga made his sort of Met debut in spring training 2 years ago, this is the dark arts of Kodai Senga. He'll put guys on base. He'll give up two out walks. He'll give up base hits. There'll be a runner on third with less than two outs basically every inning, but he finds a way to not only get ahead of hitters, throw that ghost fork and strike a guy out with a runner on third and less than two outs, but get the big out when he needs to. Go back to the second inning. He first gets bailed out by great defense by Brandon Nimmo, who's got this thing for robbing Joey Bart, which he did on Monday. And he didn't do nearly as impressively on Tuesday. The Bart fly ball in the second inning, I don't think was getting out. I don't think it was going over the fence. But nevertheless, Brandon Nimmo leaps up into the air and takes what would have been an extra base hit away from Joey Bart. And then Senga gives up that triple to Ke'Bryan Hayes. Runner on third, less than two outs. Here we go. The early Met 1-0 lead is about to go away. And he gets Canario to pop up to short center field. Nice little play by Brett Beatty getting back on that ball because the infield was in at that time with a runner on third and less than two outs. And then he strikes out Triolo. Kodai Senga giving you two huge outs with a runner on third and less than two outs. But then it's almost like Kodai Senga said, all right, you thought that was impressive. You thought that was pretty good. Let me give up a double to Adam Frazier on a ball that literally goes off of the body of Mark Vientos. There has been some very weird Mets middle infield defense. I guess we can include the Pirates in this too. A lot of weird defensive plays on the infield in this series. We'll go through all of them. But the Vientos one against Adam Frazier in the third inning was up there with the most bizarre. The ball comes up on him. He kind of falls down. It hits his body, bounces far enough away for Henry Davis to go first to third, and bounces enough far enough away for Adam Frazier to turn it into a double. Second and third, less than two outs, and here's Met killer IKF and Brian Reynolds. And he strikes out Isaiah Kinnear-Falefa, which you could feel coming because Falefa was hacking at pitches out of the strike zone, but was fouling them off on one and two. And Senga probably thought, let me just keep doing this. Eventually, he's going to chase. He's not going to tap it foul. And that's exactly what he did on the 1-2 pitch with one out. Then he gets Brian Reynolds to bounce out. So second inning, runner on third, one out. Runners don't score. Third inning, second and third, one out. Runners don't score. And then maybe his most impressive work in the fourth inning, he walks Joey Bart, he gives up a base hit to Ke'Bryan Hayes, and then goes out and strikes out Canario, Triolo, and Bay back-to-back-to-back. This was truly the Kodai Senga, I'm a magician kind of game. And then he does it again in the fifth inning. Walks a guy with one out, Adam Frazier, throws a wild pitch. So another great opportunity for this limp Pirate offense to score. And he gets IKF to ground out. He gets Brian Reynolds to fly out. And I was surprised, but happily surprised, that Carlos Mendoza, after all of that from Senga, in which he's thrown a lot of pitches, he's put himself in all these tricky situations, he allows him to come out and start the top of the sixth inning, nursing a 1-0 lead, a pitch count of 86. I like that. I did. Because Kodai Senga is the closest thing we may have to an ace. I know Clay Holmes has pitched like one, but this guy, since he's been a major leaguer, has pitched to a 2.6 ERA. Give him as much crap as you want for not being able to pitch every 5 days or not go deep into games or missing all of last season. He's literally pitching to a career ERA of 2.60. He came into this game with an ERA of 1.16. I think at this point through five innings, he had lowered his ERA under one. So push him. Sixth inning. We're not asking for the moon here. Let him start the sixth inning. Gets the first guy out, Joey Bart. Gets Keith Brian Hayes out on a ball that he hit pretty well to deep center field. And then he gives up the base hit to Alexander Canario. And one of those things I love about Mendy, we've ripped him a lot the last couple of days with some of the lineup decisions, some of the moves he's made. Let me go back the other way now and give Mendy some love. He goes out, talks to Senga, but doesn't pull him. And gives him the whole, let me see how you're feeling. Let me take the temperature of the situation right now. Let me see if I feel comfortable allowing you to try to get through this sixth inning with a one-run lead and a runner on first and two outs. And quite frankly, he basically got through the inning because he gets Triolo to ground one to Mark Vientos, and somehow, some way, the ball literally went through Mark Vientos' glove. I don't know how that happened. I still don't understand it. But it went through his freaking glove. And SNY shows us the replay. It's not a broken glove. It's not like the glove just shattered. I guess it was too loose, as Jesse Winker was saying. And the ball went right through it. Hoff, you are involved in youth baseball. In your time, even with youth baseball, have you seen a ball literally go through a glove the way we saw with Mark Vientos in that very pivotal moment?
I've got to be honest. I've seen a lot of laces hanging around, and we sit there and we point it out, be like, hey, we got to tighten that. I have kids come up to me and like, this doesn't look right. It's like, you know, the laces are literally untied all over the place, and we do some work on it. But like, no, that's never happened. Like, no, the ball doesn't, unless the glove breaks in that moment. I've never seen a ball go through a glove like that. That is absurd. And whoever made that glove should burn all their material. Seriously.
Now, what annoyed me, I have to admit, is how is that not an error? Like, that was the other thing that's bothering me. Like, I get it's a malfunction of the equipment, if you will, but the ball went through his glove. If it goes through his glove, it's an error. If it's off your glove, it's an error. I've had a very rough 2 days in terms of digesting scoring decisions in this series. They've also made changes, which I've talked about. I don't like to make changes. I write it down in my scorebook. It is what it is. Don't change it a day later like they eventually did with Lindor's base hit in the ninth inning of game one, which we'll get to later. But they immediately say, oh, yeah, that's a double through the glove of Mark Vientos. It's not a double. It's an E5. And why does that make a difference? Well, it would have kept Kodai Senga's unearned run streak going. And instead, second and third, two outs. And at that point, I was very conflicted. Because at that point, he's done a great job against Hanbei. He got the last out essentially by getting a ground ball to third base. And if you're comfortable letting him throw at 99, why not 102? He only threw three more pitches between the last visit that Mendoza made and would be allowing him to try to get Jihan Bey to end the inning. Now he goes to Reed Garrett. I'm not complaining. It's one of those managerial moves that I lean towards keeping Senga in, but I understand saying, all right, I gave you a crack. You gave up back-to-back hits, even if one of them should have been an error. Let me go to one of my better relievers in Reed Garrett. And Senga got the big ovation he deserved, but I was leaning towards giving him that one more opportunity, especially because he had handled Bay so far. He was 0 for 2 with a strikeout. Instead, he goes to Reed Garrett, who has been in the circle of trust, and Reed Garrett decides to put some glasses on for some reason and can't throw a freaking strike. You cannot come into this game if you're Reed Garrett and you're facing Jahan Bey, who does not have a hit this season. You cannot walk him on four pitches, base open or not. Can't do it. So that was warning sign number one by Reed Garrett. And then he walks Henry Davis to tie the game. The one run the Pittsburgh Pirates were able to put on the board was Reed Garrett walking the ninth place hitter and his 125 batting average with the bases loaded and two outs. Is Reed Garrett still in the circle of trust? I would say he is, but I would also say that game two against the Pirates was very damaging for him in terms of trustiness. Now, where I'll give Reed a little bit of credit is that after he gives up the lead by issuing that walk, he's got to face Adam Frazier with the bases loaded. And considering at this point the Pirates were 0 for 9 with runners in scoring position, and Reed Garrett couldn't throw a strike to the 8-9 hitter, it was certainly possible that Adam Frazier was going to rip one up the alley and sort of break this game open. But to Garrett's credit, he got ahead of him. He got him to turn one over and bounce it out to Pete Alonso, and he won an 8-pitch battle with Adam Frazier. So it was a failed performance by Reed Garrett, but it doesn't turn into an unmitigated disaster because he is able to get that last out. Kodai Senga's performance, I would certainly give him a B+. I think what we would all like from Kodai is, while the giving up no runs part is great, I guess, think about it, the one run he gave up, it was charged to him, but it occurred with Mark Vientos letting a ball go through his glove and a relief pitcher coming in and walking the 8-9 hitters. That's how Kodai Senga gave up the one earned run he gave up in this game. And I love that. I mean, Kodai Senga not giving up any runs is great. It would be nice to not put yourself in jams every inning, and it would be nice to go deeper into games. Because if you don't go deeper into games, just to answer a question that I know some people have, which is how come Kodai Senga is not amongst the ERA leaders? So I'll give you a little formula that you'll never forget if you want to know what qualifies for an ERA lead or any of those categories. Every game you play, you have to hit it with an inning. So, for example, coming into this game, the Mets had played 42 games. Kodai Senga had thrown 38 and two-thirds innings. That number lower than the amount of games the Mets have played. Now, they have now played 43 games, and he is now at 44 and a third innings. So Kodai Senga tomorrow will qualify for the ERA lead, and then a day later won't. if that makes any sense. And guess what? If he's only going to go five innings and he's pitching every 6 day, he's never going to qualify for the ERA lead. Not that that's my problem or your problem. I'm just explaining the situation when it comes to Kodai Senga. Very nice work by Max Kranick, who has been shaky recently. In fact, we took him out of the circle of trust. Heart of the batting order. Granted, the heart of the batting order against the Pirates is garbage. But Kranick comes in, 1-2-3 inning, barely breaks a sweat. Ryan Stanek pumping those high fastballs, does a really good job. The offense did nothing. I mean, look, it was your typical, the offense is going to frustrate us kind of day, very similar to what we saw in game one of this series. I guess give the Pirates credit. Mitch Keller threw a hell of a game outside of the mistake he made early to Brandon Nimmo. Juan Soto gets a hit, steals second, which I thought was pretty cool. Juan getting a huge jump against Mitch Keller and stealing a base. And then Brandon Nimmo ripping that RBI double to left center field. But that was it. I mean, they really could not hit Mitch Keller, especially Francisco Lindor. Francisco Lindor looked so overmatched against Mitch Keller, which is it's a rare thing. You know, very rarely have we seen Francisco Lindor look overmatched against anybody. But for whatever reason, Mitch Keller in this game really had his number. He struck him out on 3 pitches in the first inning. He struck him out on like 4 pitches in the third inning. He struck him out on 3 pitches in the fifth inning. It was very, very strange. One last thing about Singh I want to go back to, and then we'll get into this Met offense and the rest of this win. How about the fact that Pete Alonso is in the bathroom? Clearly, that's what's going on. He is in the bathroom. He is late to get on the field in the top of the sixth inning. Kodai Senga is about to pitch. Pete Alonso is sprinting onto the field. I'm sure Hoff has seen that in Little League, where, you know, kids are going to the bathroom and they may be late to get on the field, or they're just late to get on the field because, you know, you get distracted. And they called a pitch clock violation on Kodai Senga. And worst of all, they're talking about the pitch clock violation. They're breaking it down like, hey, should we call it? Should we do it? You're wasting time on a violation that's there to speed up the game. And we're just standing around waiting to find out, you know, if Carlos Torres and Lance Barrett want to call this, and whoever the home plate umpire is, I forget his name, Bolo. I know all the umpires, Ballou, that's his name. I know a lot of the umpires in baseball. I'm not familiar with Ballou. I'm not familiar with your work, Ballou. But they call a pitch clock violation to start the sixth inning. And luckily, it turned out to not be a big deal because the batter was Joey Bart. They ended up getting him out anyway. But can we use reason every once in a while? Just a little bit of logic. The pitch clock violation and the rules around the pitch clock are not there because a first baseman had to pee or whatever it was, and he was late to get on the field. I think sometimes we need to use reason. Like, for example, I'll give you a great example. If Yankee fans decide to give Juan Soto a standing ovation when he returns to Yankee Stadium on Friday night, I am being very facetious, but let's just play along. They've decided to give him a standing ovation because they realize he carried them to a World Series. And so Yankee fans are saying, you know what? You left, you went to the Mets, but we really appreciate what you did for us. So we're going to give you a standing ovation. And he's getting a raucous standing ovation at Yankee Stadium, top of the first inning Friday night. And he steps out to tip his hat. Are we going to call a violation on Juan Soto for not being in the box? Hey, let's use reason. If a guy is getting a standing ovation, let's be okay about it. If a guy's got to go to the bathroom, let's be okay about it. I wanted to get that off my chest. But the offense was frustrating. I mean, they could not figure out Mitch Keller. Really, the only guy that looked pretty good was Juan Soto, who had that base hit in the first inning and then drew a walk in the third inning that unfortunately didn't go anywhere. Brandon Nimmo, like I mentioned, did have the RBI double. And what made Keller really effective was that he was so economical that he was able to stay in this game, get through seven innings, and only throw 96 pitches. So the offense was frustrating until Brett Beatty goes Oppo Taco. And I want to read an email. We've got a ton of them. I'm going to try to get to a few of them throughout the pod today. But Steve writes, I don't get the Brett Beatty disrespect. Hi, Evan and Pete. I wrote this email below in March. He enclosed his March email to us about Brett Beatty. I'll never understand how easily fans turn on young prospects these days. We see it in all sports. I'm glad he's finally turned the corner. At this point, with Vientos struggling on defense, Beatty should be the everyday third baseman, and Vientos should be the full-time DH. Now, Steve, during March, wrote about how he was baffled by the Brett Beatty hate, and the main point he used was, can't we give young players more time? And Steve, I'm partially with you, because when Beatty had a good spring training, I was all set to give him another opportunity. And he got the other opportunity, and he struggled. And, you know, Greg Bird taught us this in his time with the Yankees. You're not given an unlimited amount of opportunities. Eventually, you need to perform. And Greg Bird made that famous comment after a Yankee loss in which he was struggling. He was being booed by the fans. And he said, I'm going to get 1,000 more at-bats, 1,000 more plate appearances. And it pissed a lot of Yankee fans off because they said, well, you're not entitled to 1,000 more at-bats. And I went back and looked at this a few months ago. He ended up getting about 50 more at-bats. And that was it for his major league career. So there's a fine line between, hey, he's a prospect, give him time, and hey, I've given you enough time, you are what you are. And I put this out probably about a month ago, So it is outdated now. I'm not going to put it out again. And it's also turning, which was Beatty and Bird's comparison in terms of games played, stats, production. And Beatty had almost hit the amount of games Greg Bird had played. So while I understand your point, Steve, about fans turning on prospects, at some point you need to perform. And to the credit of Brett Beatty, he was given a new lease on life with this injury to Jesse Winker. He has come back up. He's been given a chance to play, and he's performing. But I think where we are in terms of he's got to play every day here or that guy's got to play every day there, I think the Mets are in a great spot where there's a lot of guys competing. There's a lot of guys who just need to perform. And if they perform, they'll play. So should Brett Beatty be in the lineup? Now, he won't be in the lineup on Wednesday because there's a lefty on the mound. So even though that lefty is not Sandy Koufax, it's Bailey Falter, I can promise you Beatty is probably not playing. And that will annoy some people, especially coming off a game in which he had a home run. But I think what Mendy's going to do, and it's a good problem, and it's going to cause us to debate a lot. I think he's got a lot of guys competing for at-bats, and every day someone is going to sit that's going to cause us to say, why him? So in the game that was played on Tuesday night, the why him was Luis Angel Acuña. He did not play. And we saw Brett Beatty at second, Vientos at third, McNeil at DH, Taylor in center field. In game one of this series, a game we'll break down in a few minutes, the odd man out was Tyrone Taylor. We saw Angel Acuña at second, Beatty at third, Vientos at DH, McNeil in center field. I think if you exclude Nimmo and you just say, he's pretty much going to play every day, you are looking at a competition between Mark Vientos, Jeff McNeil, Brett Beatty, Luis Angel Acuña, and Tyrone Taylor. Five different players battling for four spots. Every day, barring an off day to Nimmo or a rare off day for Lindor or Soto or Alonso, which doesn't happen, let's be honest, you're looking at those five guys rotating with one guy sitting. And I can promise you this, based on who's hitting, based on who's hot, those opinions are going to go all over the place. Mendy's going to play the matchups. He's going to also look at defense. So you have a fly ball pitcher on the mound. He's not going to play Jeff McNeil in center field. But if it's a game in which he thinks a lot of balls are going to be hit on the ground, like he thought with David Peterson on the mound, great. I'll stick Jeff McNeil in center field. No harm, no foul. And that's where we're at. And I think with five guys for four spots and you normally playing six games in a week, each guy will sit once a week. I mean, you can factor it that way. And then on the sixth day, maybe it's a Brandon Nimmo who actually sits. Certainly possible. Now, this doesn't include Starling Marte. And I don't think Marte should be completely buried. So in the finale against the Pirates with Falter on the mound, I think Marte will play. And I think it's important for him to play because you have 13 guys on your roster in terms of position players. You can't have a guy sit for 2 weeks. And the reason you can't is because at some point you may need that player. So why are you sitting him for a long period of time when eventually you're going to need him? But in the case of game two, we got to see a lot of guys that you prefer. Acuña was the odd man out until Acuña came in for defense in the ninth inning. And my God, speaking of that ninth inning, Edwin Diaz, who has been perfect in terms of saving games, comes in, one-run lead after Beatty hits the home run two innings earlier, gets the first guy out. Great. Everybody's happy. Four-pitch walk to Adam Frazier cannot happen. And the other thing, which has not popped its head up a lot this season because the Mets have done such a good job of throwing guys out, Edwin Diaz allows a not one but two easy-peasy stolen bases. Adam Frazier steals second, and then even IKF, who reached on the Lindor error, steals second. And so all of a sudden, because of Edwin Diaz's inability to hold guys on, second and third, one out. Credit to Diaz. He's done this all year. Put himself in a jam, get out of it, strikes out Brian Reynolds. And then Joey Bart on an 0-2 pitch hits a ball that off the bat, did we not all think that was going to be a two-run single? But Acuña, who had just come in for defense for Vientos, really, because Beatty moved to third, played perfectly where Bart hit that screaming line drive and it turns into an easy 4-3 out. But what made this inning difficult was not just Diaz walking Frazier on four pitches, but Francisco Lindor. And we all love Francisco. Francisco had a very net negative kind of game. Now, is he the front runner to be the Rico Brunia net negative? I don't know. He did have three hits in the opener. But in game two of this series, he goes 0-for-4 with three strikeouts and makes a very big error against IKF. An error you can't make. You can't make that error. Runner on second, one out, one run lead, an easy ground ball to shortstop. And for whatever reason, the throw tailed. The throw was just sailing away, and Pete Alonso has to come off the bag, makes the leap, runner is safe. And this is the second straight game where Francisco Lindor's defense in the ninth inning needs to be questioned. I'm not concerned. We say this a lot. It's just an unacceptable play. He needs to be better, and Francisco Lindor will be the first guy to tell you. Now, let's get to the opener of this series, because Monday night's opener was fascinating on a lot of levels. You get David Peterson, who gives up the home run to IKF and then really settles in and makes all the big pitches he needs to make, much like Senga. The second run he gives up is after he issues a leadoff walk and Carlos Mendoza goes to the bullpen. The story of the opener of this series was how it was so typical to watch this Met offense put a country on base and not be able to drive them in. And I'll continue to take my chances that if you put enough guys on base, eventually you will cash in. But go back to the first inning of game one. Lindor leadoff hit, Juan Soto walk. 2-1, nobody out against the great Paul Skeens. And Alonso double play, Nimmo strikeout. You get 2-1 with one out in the second inning. Beatty strikeout, Acuna ground out. You get a leadoff double from Brandon Nimmo in the fourth inning. You actually get that run in on the Jeff McNeil double, and then that can't be cashed in. Runner on first, one out in the fifth with Soto and Alonso. They both strike out. You get a one-out double from Mark Vientos, and then a huge double play off the bat of Francisco Alvarez. They had so many opportunities against Paul Skeens, and they couldn't cash it in. And then it continues a little bit against their bullpen. Not as much in the seventh inning because they did get the first two guys on base. Soto hit that ground ball that I'm surprised scored a run. Second and third, or I think it was first and third, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was first and third when Lindor struck out with nobody out, and Soto hits that little ground ball to first base. And I thought off the bat, Gorski was going to have a chance to throw a guy out at the plate, was unable to. They get the out, but a run scores. And then Pete Alonso gets an infield hit. So the Met big hits weren't exactly crushed. They weren't ripping the ball all over the place. They were 3-for-14 with runners in scoring position going into that ninth inning. But luckily, Peterson made it stand up. Budo made it stand up. And even Dednell Nunez made it stand up. It was the first decent performance by Dednell. He did get bailed out on the Brandon Nimmo take a home run away from Joey Bart. But even after that, he gets the break. He does make big pitches to get Adam Frazier out. He gets IKF out, and we get ourselves a 1-2-3 inning from Nunez, who cannot be reentered into the circle of trust, but it was certainly a nice step for him. Nice little step for Nunez, giving you that clean eighth inning. Brazoban doesn't deserve any hate for blowing the one-run lead. But let it be a reminder to Pete Hoffman. Don't tell us we can live without Edwin Diaz. Because every freaking time they've asked someone not named Diaz to save a game, every time that guy blows it. Every time.
Oh, you're going to blame that on Brazoban, or you're going to blame that on Francisco Lindor? Okay? Because that's where the blame should really be.
I am going to blame Francisco Lindor, because his defense was atrocious on what should have been an easy double play. And so Brazoban was not bad. But nevertheless, the facts are the facts. Every time someone not named Edwin Diaz tries to save a game, they blow the game. Now, was that on Brazoban? No. Even the Cabrian Hayes play to Acuna, they ended up calling out a base hit. That's an error too. Acuna's got to make that play. So the defense, for whatever reason in the ninth inning, was horrendous, especially from two guys who were so sure-handed like Lindor and Acuna.
No, and the defense, to be fair, it's been shoddy the past 2 days. I mean, you go through, I think maybe even the Cubs series was pretty bad, but the base running blunders, I mean, Acuna yesterday had to, like, he made a nice play running through third base, seeing that the defensive, I think it was the third baseman, misplayed it and went and scored a run, where the Pirate player earlier in the game kind of stood flat, got and stopped at third base. But it was all game yesterday where everybody at third base is just like, they're either misreading it or just, they're not fielding it cleanly. It's sloppy play between shortstop and third.
I would understand the Tuesday game because the weather conditions weren't great, but the Monday game doesn't make as much sense. It was a beautiful Monday night at the ballpark, and the defense was atrocious all the way around. I mean, even the Pirates had bad defense, and you had that weird play in the ninth inning after the Mets had given up the lead, and we all kind of figured, you better win this game right now. You know, Diaz isn't available. You've used Prazabon. You've used Nunez. If you've used Budo, I guess they were going to go to Kranich or Garrett at that point to pitch the 10th inning. But I looked at the bottom of the ninth inning after they gave up the lead and said, just win the game right now. Don't even leave this to the extra inning chance of the Manfred man on second base. And Lindor was the one who hit that ground ball to shortstop that I guess grazed the bag, which is what caused IKF to not be able to come up cleanly with it, which was why it was turned into a base hit. But how about that weirdness of a play? A ground ball up the middle that grazes the second base bag and causes just enough of a deflection for a usually sure-handed IKF to not be able to make that play. And credit to Soto. You know, we gave Juan Soto the net negative from the Chicago series. That base hit in the ninth inning, while it doesn't go down as a hit with runners in scoring position, and it's not a walk-off where he can get candy thrown on his head, runner on first, one out, base hit that allowed Lindor to go first to third was a huge hit. It was an underratedly huge hit by Juan Soto, who had not had a base hit in about 3 days. So Soto deserves a little bit of credit. That ground out in the seventh inning was some weak cheese, but he did get an RBI out of it. The base hit in the ninth inning off of David Bednar was a big-time hit because it allowed Pete to come up where all he needed to do was get the ball out of the infield. And I got to say this because I don't get this, and I'm going to say this a lot coming up with this Yankee series, and I've said this on WFAN. You should not face Aaron Judge. You are stupid to face Aaron Judge. You should dare every single person around Aaron Judge to beat you. And the Mets did that last year, and they should do that this weekend against the Yankees. With that said, why am I bringing this up? If you are the Pittsburgh Pirates, first and third, one out, the only run that matters is the guy on third base. It is a tie game in the bottom of the ninth inning. Why are you facing Pete Alonso? Can you ask me that? Answer me that one. Like, how dumb do you need to be? The guy leads the league in RBIs. The guy has been a machine, and you're behind 3-1. If you're behind 3, go after Nimmo. Brandon Nimmo has left a continent on base. And yet, for some reason, the Pirates want to go after Pete Alonso? It is disrespect. I'm not complaining. I know it sounds like I am. I'm just shocked. I'm passionate. That's all it is. I'm stunned that they would say, yeah, you know, base open, 3-1 pitch. Let's go after Pete Alonso. Does not make any sense. All right, let's get to the Paul Skeens discussion because I know everybody wants to have it. The Pittsburgh Pirates are going to trade Paul Skeens. They just are. And if you watch the broadcast, Gary Cohn and Ron Darling had an interesting discussion about how they push Skeens, how the Pirates don't seem to have restrictions on Skeens. They don't seem to restrict his pitch count very much. They don't restrict his innings very much. Coming into the start that he made against the Mets, he was at 48 2/3 innings through 8 starts. And while that may not sound like a lot, in this modern age with a young phenom pitcher who's barely out of college, it is a lot. And so they were talking about that and how aggressive they are with him and how surprising that is for a team to handle a young starter. And to me, it is very obvious why. They will not pay Paul Skeens. They're not going to pay him. And so the Pirates are probably just showcasing him to no end. They're also trying to win. I mean, obviously, they're not good at that winning part, but they are trying to win. And that eventually, and I'm not saying it's going to be this year. I don't think it's going to be this year, but they're going to trade this guy. There is no doubt. And I think what's going to be fascinating is when they do it and how much they get for him. And a part of me says that's so bad for baseball. Like, why would the Pittsburgh Pirates, who has this, they have this phenom, they have this guy that is probably the most marketable starting pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. He's incredibly young. How could they possibly trade him? And the only reason I would tell you that, yeah, it's bad for baseball, but it actually makes a lot of sense, is that they suck so much. They are so bad. They are so bereft of talent, and he's a starting pitcher, and starting pitchers are time bombs. They are, and they also, in this day and age, impact so little of your baseball season. You know, you're going to play 162 games. This guy's going to start 30 of them, and oh, by the way, in the 30 of them that he starts, and we even saw this in the game on Monday, he's out after six innings and doesn't even impact on the decision. So if you're able to get a super package back, a Sotoian package back. You like that? That's a verb. Or, yeah, is that a verb? Yeah, Soto to Soto, a Sotoian. No, that's not a verb. Either way, if you're able to get an absurd package back like the Nationals got for Juan Soto, I think you'd have to consider it. So I asked my fellow Met fan, if the Pittsburgh Pirates are considering it, are we willing to unload everything? Are we willing to unload? The Mets have three top 100 prospects right now. Are you willing to unload all of them? Are you willing to say Jet Williams, Brandon Sproat, Drew Getley, everybody? It's six best prospects. See you later for Paul Skeens. And I know most people listening would probably say yes, and it's worth the risk, even though the Mets could turn anyone into Paul Skeens with their pitching lab. But it is worth thinking about because I do think eventually they are going to trade him. It's not going to be this season, but they will. Let's shoot through some of your emails. Mark writes, Evan, the Brett Beatty experiment may finally be happening. Imagine what this team looks like if Beatty can hit like we know he could. It deepens the lineup so much and makes our infield defense that much better. It lets Vientos DH and play the sure-handed Beatty at third base for 85% of our games. The future's looking bright. I can't believe we've gotten to a point where he is sure-handed, Brett Beatty. Leo writes, Brett Beatty, I believe in him, and no, I do not want to trade him. Michael writes, I'm thinking Reed Garrett needs to have whoever supplies his glasses fix his prescription. You can't walk the 8 and 9 hitters back-to-back and walk a run in. Reed Garrett is still in the circle of trust, but thus far, Reed Garrett with glasses is another story. This game has been odd. With what Lindor struggles at the plate today and Vientos' glove having a ball go through. Yeah, very weird game. Very, very weird game. Very, very strange game. Timothy Greco writes, Gary Cohen. All right, Evan, Gary's been an absolute trash judging fly balls and home runs. I know he's getting old, but it's no excuse. I can tell better sitting on my couch than he can from behind home plate at the game. Specifically, the fly ball from Vientos in the sixth that started the call like it was a no-doubter. It's almost like every game, and even the home runs that he thinks are fly balls, it's brutal. I love Gary Cohen. I think that, look, he's getting older. I mean, John Sterling, I love him too. Howie Rose, I love him too. Bob Murphy, I love them too. You get older, you're not as perfect. Mark writes, Mendoza, WTF. Why are we letting Senga go 100-plus pitches after a walk in the sixth inning? Put Reed Garrett in a horrible position. You take Senga out, and Mets probably are still up 1-0. So frustrating. So I guess that's Mark disagreeing with me completely and saying you should have taken him out earlier. I don't know. I don't agree with that. I like challenging Kodai Senga. DJ Endick writes, net negative of the series. I'm calling it right now in the sixth inning of game two. The net negative of the Pirates series is Mark Vientos' glove. How does he not replace that thing immediately? He doesn't replace it, but they tighten it up. Charlie writes, our ace was able to battle out of trouble the whole night, but Vientos' comic book is unable to catch, and Reed Garrett did his best Edwin Diaz impression. Then we go down 1-2-3. The offense needs to be better when we're playing the Pittsburgh Pirates. I give the Pirates this. Paul Skeens is elite. He really is. He's that good. So I think not being able to take advantage of your opportunities against Skeens is at least understandable because of the fact he is one of the better pitchers in baseball. And don't be fooled by Mitch Keller's stats this season. I think he's a solid pitcher. I do. I think he is. So I think maybe a little bit, just a tad bit, we can give some credit to the Pittsburgh Pirates. But now it leads to the finale of this three-game series where the Mets have an opportunity to sweep the Pittsburgh Pirates and make this a very successful 5-1 homestand. And that would be a great success. They're going to face a lefty, Bailey Falter, on Wednesday, and Clay Holmes will be on the mound. I admit there's a part of me that was intrigued by inserting a sixth starter here. Paul Blackburn is almost ready. And actually giving Clay Holmes the opportunity to face the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium. I was intrigued by that. Now, they're deciding not to do that. They have the off day, so everyone else will be able to get the extra day of rest. And Holmes' start on Wednesday will actually be on regular rest. But I was intrigued to see how Clay Holmes would do against that Yankee lineup. So it will be Tylor Megill. It will be Griffin Canning. And then on Sunday, it will be... Hold on, I wrote it down because I'm so excited about these matchups. It'll be David Peterson. The Yankees haven't announced anything officially, so I am projecting, this is my projections, that it is going to be Carlos Rodon on Friday, Clark Schmidt's fifth day would be Saturday, and Max Fried's fifth day would be Sunday night, and that would certainly be a challenge. So it looks like two lefties in the Yankee series with Rodon and Fried. Speaking of the Yankee series, we do plan on trying to give you Rico Bronya's after each game. I will be at Friday night's game. Pete, are you going to Friday night's game? There's been mixed reports on your attendance for the opener of the Yankee-Mets series.
So I'm the only idiot that continues to say that I will be there. But it sounds like, you know, Sal, BT is definitely not going to be there. McMonagle and Sal sound like they're going if there's no game six of the Knicks-Celtics series. But, I mean, let's be serious. We're going to have a game six of the Knicks-Celtics series, so I'm assuming they're not going to be there.
I'm gonna be very nice about this. This is the Rico Bronya, okay? Oh. I don't care about Chris, Big Mac, BT, or even Sal going to the Subway Series. I'm asking about you. Are you going to the Subway Series on Friday night?
Well, we're like a package deal. That's the problem.
Are you going or are you not going?
I believe I am. But then again, the person that has the tickets might sell them if half the crew doesn't show up.
I understand. So Pete is a game time decision for Friday yes. night. I will give you this little preview for my plans for the Subway Series. We are doing the Evan and Tiki show from Yankee Stadium. So we'll be in the building Friday night. I don't know where I'm sitting, but I will be there Friday night. Saturday, I'm not only not going, Pete. Saturday is going to be a DVR day. So ooh. I would advise that the Rico Bronya, do not expect it at 4 o'clock after the game is over. That'll be sometime late Saturday. My kids have, you know what? I try to be a good father. I really do. And there's Little League, there's a piano lesson, and it's also a Saturday afternoon. Now, if the weather's bad, I guess that could all be banged. So I'll probably watch the game at some point on Saturday with my sons. Sunday night, I'm looking forward to. I'm going to that game as well. So I'll be at two of the games over at Yankee Stadium for Mets-Yankees. Now, as far as the series recap of the Rico Bronya, this has been a fun episode. We've talked about game one. We've talked about game two. Game three is Wednesday night, and I will actually be in Boston for the New York Knicks against the Boston Celtics. My plan is to have the Met game on my tablet while in Boston at Knicks-Celtics. When the Knicks game is over and the Met game is over, I'm going to do a Rico Bronya with you. Now, Pete's going to be at the Met game, which I think is great, so that you can offer some insight for anything I do miss while at a playoff game. And so we will do our series recap. We will hand out the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, the net negative, which causes major, major controversy. So we'll have our normal awards, but it will be odd because I will be either driving back from Boston doing that Rico, or in a hotel in Boston doing that Rico. So there will be some kind of Boston tinge to our series recap of the Rico Bronya posted late Wednesday night.
Can I ask a question? If there is a hotel Rico Bronya, will there be other men in that room with you?
Absolutely not. I travel solo. I am driving solo. I'm going in the hotel solo. It is a very solo Sokoa kind of night. That's a wrestler. And his name is Solo Sokoa, yes.
Did he just die? Or that was Saku?
No, Solo Sokoa is like 28 years old. He's a pro wrestler. Now, you're thinking of the great Sabu, who wrestled in Extreme Championship Wrestling. Yes.
There you go. Yeah, he died. Sorry.
Yes, he did. Condolences to the Sabu family.
Yes.
Either way, we appreciate you listening and downloading. So that's our schedule coming up. We will have a series recap of the Rico Bronya that will be posted at some point Wednesday night. And we will attempt and will give you Rico Bronya's recapping all of the Subway Series. So Yankee fans, come on down. The Yankee fan loves to be voyeuristic in the Met Yankee games, especially if you win. So come on down to our special Rico Bronya's over the weekend. We appreciate you listening, downloading, and subscribing. A very happy edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.